This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Mike Best, Master of Wine and the youngest Master of Wine in the world at the moment, or ever.
At the moment.
At the moment?
Not ever. At the moment, yeah.
Someone's passed but younger than you.
Yeah. Stephen Barrett at age 25, a record which will never be beaten, I think.
And how old are you at the moment,
32.
Mike? Oh, you're quite old then.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting on.
Yeah, 32. Oh, ancient. Well, what I want to talk to you, Mike, about is you wrote your dissertation for the Master of Wine. And when did you graduate? Just recently?
2020, August 2020.
Yeah. So it's quite recently. And you did it on cellar doors. What's going on in a cellar door and whether it's good value for a winery to have it and all this sort of carry on. And I thought what we'd do is just have a little bit of a chat about the cellar door experience as a man who clearly been to a cellar door in his time. Have you ever worked in a cellar door?
I have done a couple of shifts actually, yeah, and it's in cellar door, but I did a vintage in Australia at Bird in Hand in Adelaide Hills in 2014, and I'm not very good practically, but I did force myself to work in the winery, and they took me from night shift to finishing up a few shifts on the cellar door over Easter.
Did you have the skills for it?
I like talking about wine, so that's probably the thing I'm almost best at, I would say. So
yeah. Well, it was interesting to see what people said, because you, as part of your dissertation, obviously a Master of Wine dissertation, it's supposed to be proper research, not just sort of hearsay and what you think. So you've done surveys and you've talked to producers about...
Yeah, interviews and so on, yeah.
Yeah, interviewed them and tried to get a feel for what they think are the biggest points for cellar doors. And one of the things they said was it wasn't necessarily about how much you knew about wine. It was more about the customer interaction that was more important than the wine knowledge. As a Master of Wine, I'm sure... Sure, you've got the wine knowledge, but has he got the customer interaction?
Exactly. Have I got the gift of the gab?
Yeah,
exactly. Oh, look, it's true. You need to be able to talk to people. And for me, I when I was growing up and worked in hospitality, I think I learned a lot of that skill from going from table to table, where sometimes people are going out for a business lunch, they need a certain experience. Sometimes people are going out for a romantic meal, they need a different experience. You've got people with young families, they need a different experience. And all the time, you're like chopping and changing these tables next to each other. So that's a good setup, I think, for anything in working life, and certainly correlates to the cellar door.
Actually, you're right, actually. Hospitality, even though the response was, it's about the customer experience, not each customer is uniquely different, but there's different types of customers looking for different types of experience, and being able to read that type and tailor it to fit that requirement is probably quite an important aspect of managing their experience.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why it'd be very important, for example, to employ people who are able to do that. I think that some of the criticisms that have happened from a consumer point of view is they go on a tour and they feel like someone's just there who's learnt the script, and that's fine. And I know that, okay, you can't always, if you're a big winery, you can't go for a tour with the winemaker all the time because they need to make wine. You need to employ people then who are able to have actually maybe worked a harvest or actually understand more than just having read a script about it. Otherwise, you aren't getting that kind of level of detail that a number of customers will be after.
Okay, so why do people... Your dissertation was mainly on the UK.
Yep.
There was a lot of comparison to Oregon.
Yes.
As part of that, why did they choose Oregon? Why did you choose Oregon?
Of a comparison that WineGB, the generic body for the wines of Great Britain, made, saying that they saw Oregon as some sort of target or model for the future. I mean, in many ways, it makes sense. It's a prestigious area, the high value wines, high quality wines, and has a domestic market that sells a lot of wine, but most of it not from consumption locally. So there is a lot of synergy. So that was what WineGB chose. So I thought, well, is there something that we can learn from a more established wine region, i.e. Oregon, which WineGB have said, for our own market? So fascinating, really, to ring up producers in Oregon. I wish I could have gone. I would have.
Of course, but, you did.
Yeah, of course. of course, I wish I could have. I almost did, but then, COVID, so... But it was really, really good to talk to them. And the biggest single thing that they had to say that made them stand out was that they knew exactly what they were trying to do. And I give people in the in England and Wales a bit of leeway on that, because everything's being established, things are changing, people are growing, so much is happening. So it's difficult to say we're going after this market, because how could you know? Maybe many wineries only been established 3 or 5 years. In Oregon, they've been established 25, 30 years, so they know a bit more about it. So yeah, they knew exactly what they were trying to do, and I thought that was very impressive.
In the UK, why do people do cellar door? Because there was a lot of people not doing cellar door at all. I don't know if you remember the stats off the top of your head. I've just read the dissertation, so I've got them. But there was something like 53% are open all year round.
Yeah,
27% are open on a limited basis, maybe during the peak season or in the weekends, and then 20% just. Our appointment only, you know, if you want to, and there's a reason for it. Obviously, about half the people are open all the time, really touting for a bit of business.
Yeah,
but half them are less inclined. So why?
There's a couple of reasons. I think if I can remember wine GB figures correctly, certainly sort of 2020 time, a third of wine was sold via the cellar door. So it's a lot of. You know, it's a big volume out of the sort of 12 to 16 million bottles somewhere around there that UK makes overall. The reason why, though, people don't open is because it's expensive primarily. So if you were to, and you need to have the setup there ready to go. So it costs money to have somebody who's there. If you're the winemaker or you're there working in the office and sorting out orders and dealing with other things, and then you need to have a dedicated person to it. So you really need to, it's a big investment, really. People have looked at other things. Shall we be collaborating with a number of smaller vineyards? Should we get together in some sort of cohort? Would we prefer to take our wines to, you know, local farmers markets or fairs to sell them there? And if people want to drop in, that's okay. But and then there are some vineyards as well where access is a problem. So they don't have like a car park set up, or they're not really on a tourist route. And then so they need to think about things in slightly different ways. I mean, we sort of get a bit carried away by the southeast of England and thinking that that's what all of England is. And there's lots of people and there's lots of tourism around there and hotels and campsites and restaurants. It's not like that across all of England. So, yeah, those are some of the reasons.
So sales, I think sales was one of the ones that the big driver, wasn't it, for it? But it did seem to vary depending on the size of the winery. I noticed that some of the bigger wineries in the UK, and when we say big wineries, I mean they're not big by American standards.
No.
They're big by European standards, strangely enough, but not by American standards. They were talking more about things like brand exposure,
for sure,
and branding and trying to position their branding, which is a different type of thing, isn't it? Why do you think the bigger wineries are less worried about cellar door sales as opposed to the smaller guys being more cellar door sales focused?
So my definition, as you know, you could criticize it, but it was over 60,000 bottles a year. It was counted as a large winery, and in some wineries in the world, that's a drop in the ocean, and for some people, that is a lot of wine. So. But the reason why larger wineries were less excited by or less dependent on cellar door sales is because they have other routes to market. So they have national and international distribution. For some small wineries, only making 3, 6, 10,000 bottles of something, that might be their only way of selling the wine, bar a few sort of local restaurants that they also distribute it to. So, and the larger wineries, they don't really, even though it's profitable selling the wine direct to consumer, they don't really need that money. They are thinking about it for different reasons, to build the brand. Maybe they can get wine club membership, and that is, you know, good for profitability. But it's more important, probably. Well, not probably. They did say it was more important for the brand building, the relationships, and those sort of indefinable things that really add sort of loyalty.
So it was more about marketing, from a marketing point of view. You did say that, obviously, and I've heard a lot of people tell me this in wineries as well, is that the margin is best at cellar door.
Yeah.
You know, the profit is best. And I think there was a question you asked people about, you know, is it worthwhile to do? And everybody was going, yes, it is definitely worthwhile. You know, cellar door is where you get the biggest slice of the action.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it can be difficult for wineries because maybe as a customer, people expect to be able to go to the winery to buy it directly and to get it at a much cheaper price. But that can't be how it works, because if you're distributing the wines nationally, internationally, then you need to have a recommended retail price and be there or thereabouts. Otherwise, the distribution won't work if you undercut the people who your distributors. That's just never going to work. So, but there is a lot of cost involved, of course, of the staff and of putting on events and tours and these kind of things. So, you know, it's a truism to say if producers around the world could sell their wines direct to consumer, then they would do. And if you look at the model that happens in the States, particularly in California, the sales are astronomical direct to consumer. They're so high, and that is very, very important for them. They wouldn't work if they couldn't get the profits from doing that.
And that was an interesting point, because one of the things that you identified between Oregon and the UK, and it didn't really appear in the UK, was building your list. Whereas in Oregon, it was a key driver. You've got to build that list. And UK, I don't think it really registered. And so when people are talking about cellar door in the UK, they're talking about standing there, selling them a case of wine, taking the card, and they're doing a transaction with the person present. Whereas if you're building a list, it's still cellar door, I suppose. Do they still call it cellar door?
They use the term tasting rooms, but anyway, it's the same thing.
Tasting room, cellar door. But if you're selling, but you're selling it through mail order or whatever, you've built that list through the cellar door, and now you're still capturing that margin. But now you're doing it. So that was, I think that was one of the sort of key takeaways I noticed, was that in Oregon, they were using it not just for brand building, but for actually customer acquisition.
Yeah, that's very important for them. I mean, because they want to carry on that experience. I think that there's a lifetime of how, you know, a membership is sort of like an average 2 or 3 years of how long someone will be a member for and get their case once a quarter or whatever the case may be. Part of the reason for that is because of the distribution model in the United States with a three-tier system, where it's not like the UK where everything's available all the time. You can just buy whatever you want. So people are more used to signing up for wine clubs. If you've got money, you're interested in wine, you want to spend it, then you might do that, because otherwise you won't be able to buy it if you're in your state or wherever. Whereas in the UK, people don't really have that way of thinking about. They don't have that need, because there's a great independent wine shop in every town. There's a supermarket with a good range. It's Majestic. You know, there's all sorts of options you can buy online, whatever. But I think that's going to happen more, because wine club's a great way of retaining customers. You can also do things like have wine club only releases. You can have cellared parcels, like older vintage parcels. You can invite them for winemakers' dinners, all these things, and sort of bring it as part of the brand loyalty piece. So I totally expect that to increase over the next few years in the UK.
Okay. The other thing that was quite interesting was that you quite often get these companies running tours. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think you referenced a particular company.
Yeah, there's a few Sussex wine tours, there's English wine tours, there's a couple of, they've all probably changed a little bit actually since COVID, but there's many, certainly in the southeast,
And basically you give them a bit of money and they take you on a tour of the wineries, maybe a little bit of a chat as you go around them, all that type of thing, which is quite nice. But the some of the sellers in your dissertation anyway commented that if you went on a tour, they didn't tend to buy the wines, which sort of defeats the purpose of having a cellar door, to try and flog the wine.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's problematic. I mean, that will... If I was in charge of a winery with a 25-year vision, thinking, okay, I'm building this for the future, I think I would go with it to a lesser or greater extent. If I was a winery living hand to mouth and thinking, oh, this is costing us money opening these bottles and we don't get much for it, it might be a bit more problematic. But it makes sense if people spend £100 roughly to go on a tour for the day, and then they see that as I've paid my bill. And they're not going to turn back at home with a case of wine. They may write down their favourites and then continue to buy them, but then you have to accept that on trust as a winery, that therefore that was worth doing. So, it can be slightly problematic. I mean, there will be some wineries who would say that was just a waste of time, but that's sort of where it is. It depends. Are you willing to do that as part of your overall PR investment package? Or not. And now, though, they're becoming, even in a short space of time, much more differentiated. So there's a number of sort of VIP tours popping up where people are paying like serious money to come on them. They want a serious experience, but actually, this can be a sort of interesting thing for people to do. So there's a lot of change there.
Are there ways to improve the profitability on those tours, given that they do, for the winery themselves, they do seem to be the sort of lower, probably lower hanging fruit, but not so fruitful?
yeah. It's easy to get the people in, but what will they actually do? You know, it's true. You know, you don't want your winery to become a theme park. Offering follow-up discounts, those kind of things, so that you can get sales afterwards. If you've got now everyone more or less have got good delivery options as well, so they can say, well, when people say, oh, I can't carry a case of wine back to my flat, you know, you can say, well, that's not a problem, we can deliver it for you, and those kind of things are useful to get sales on the day. Have gifting options as well, because one of the reasons why people spend 30 to 40 pounds on a bottle of wine plus is as a present for somebody. I mean, I think that's, they have a number in their head of like what the, you know, the uncle or the partner or whatever is worth for their birthday, say, and those kind of things. You know, there's definitely ways to follow up on it. Yeah,
I noticed there's some cunning things they did in Oregon. One of them was a guy was offering vertical tastings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the idea being that the vertical tasting lets you try some older wines, perhaps, but then you can't buy those wines out there, so anywhere else. So you're sort of, if you do like that wine, you've got to do it now or not at all, sort of thing, which I thought was cunning.
Definitely a value in having cellar door exclusives. I think if people make the effort to come to your winery on a tour by themselves, however they do it, having some element of cellar door exclusives is a really good thing. It can be a bit of a faff, if I can use that sort of British word, about because, you know, it's a hassle to have to sort of come up with some wine or some label for cellar door exclusive, but certainly as wineries grow and they get library stock and things like that, I think it's very important.
No, definitely. I think I've always been a little bit stodgy of cellar door specials myself.
Clean skins.
Well, no, not necessarily clean skins, but just because sometimes you'll get a winery and they'll do an experiment and it didn't quite work, so we won't do that, but we've got 500 litres of it. I'll tell you what we'll do, we'll just put a label on and sell it at the cellar door. So I've always been a little bit concerned that sometimes the cellar door
wines... Could be an element of that going around,
Yeah, and always the wines that they really want to double down on. But there was other things that they talked about in terms of what you can do a cellar door experience or cellar door for.
In terms of what it is that you want to get out of it, I think really it's about building brand loyalty and selling wine. Those are the primary goals. The other things have been, you know, peripheral things would be like education around wine, whether it's around that winery or wine in general, being part of the local area in terms of the whole tourism offering. So that would be very important. But probably the most important, and some people have, you know, cafes and restaurants on site, and they use it as a way to get people in there as well, which is great. But the primary differentiator is that if you give people a good experience, that is the most important thing. It's more important even than the quality of the wine. And that's been proven in the academic literature, not in my research paper, but in lots of academic papers, like done by Steve Charters, MW, who is a authority in this field as well. So, yeah.
Okay. The other things that I saw mentioned were things along the lines of, if you're a larger winery, perhaps maybe able to use your cellar door for corporate clients to come in and give them that sort of experience as well. So if you're doing not to sell wine at the door, but to have a space that you can do that. You mentioned restaurants as well, but also pop-up events and things like that as well. So if you've got some sort of space that's the centre of the business, you can then run other activities around it.
Yeah, I think that's just another added value or exciting way for people to use that space, which, let's face it, are people going to come on a Monday at 2 o'clock to come to a wine tasting in their droves? No, they aren't, but you're still paying for that space. So Monday to Wednesday, can we use it for a corporate away day? So, well, what a brilliant way of, we're gonna do a nice corporate away day, but we're hosting it at a winery. They've got all the space for hosting the meeting and events and catering. Brilliant, you know, like it just, it, and it's not beyond the realms of imagination, is it, to think about those things. So when some of the wineries said, we're not sure we can afford the space because what will we do with it? Well, you could make a lot of money that way. You might make more money than selling the wine on a Saturday, maybe. So.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I liked, I saw an Oregon producer say that, you know, what he does is he doesn't open himself to tours very often, but on a Tuesday when it's dead,
yeah,
that's when the tours come in.
That's smart as well. You know, that's a really smart thing. Because if you, and again, you know, if you have your you know, the tour company call you up as a winery and say, we'd really like to bring an event down, do you do that? And you could say, yeah, we do it on the slower days if you can organise it for then. But on a Saturday, we don't, you know, it's not in our mind to host that tour when we've got a full car park anyway, so.
We started off with starting off talking about your hospitality experience.
Yeah.
And I just want to finish up with the sort of the top four things. These were the skills that you had in order of what the cellar door people thought was important for their staff.
Yeah.
And number one was customer experience. Yeah. Number two was customer service skills. Then it was wine knowledge.
Yeah.
And then the last one was sales skills. So even though selling the wine is the key business for it, the venues themselves see that as the least most important when they're looking for a salesperson or a
yeah.
person to manage. Why do you think that is?
Well, I was very encouraged by that, because I think that that's what all of the literature and all of the research is pointing towards, is that with most wineries, and they're not in it for the short term, they're in it for the long term, and they want people to come and have a great time at the winery. If they do that, everything else follows from there. So if you come and have an amazing time, then you remember that, and you can enjoy those wines because it's about the moment. And in wine, we get so wrapped up in tasting analytically and professionally, which is also incredibly important to do if that is your job. But if it's not to assess wine in that way, which for 99% of people who drink wine it's not, because it's just a drink, it's about everything else that comes with it. So that was very encouraging. So that's why I think the customer experience is number one, and then customer service, you know, just doing the right things and being organized and everything in that sense, and then wine knowledge following up from it. You know, obviously you would prefer to have more wine knowledge or not. There's a baseline that you probably need to have, and the more the better, but ultimately it's about giving people the right time, not a hard sell.
Yeah. And it's probably better that they walk away going, that was really good, than going away with an extra case of wine that they didn't really want.
Yeah, totally. So, yep.
Okay. All right, then. I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Yep, perfect.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.